Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You are listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. Our phone number here at the station is area code 760-337-8874. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Maria. How are you?
Good.
Hey, hi out there. Hi out there. Are you guys freezing yet? Because it's chilly this morning. Unless you're listening to the show in May on the podcast. By the way, the podcast is available on KXORadio.com, and as soon as Mario cleans out all of my weird references to stuff that don't make any sense, it'll be up, okay? So welcome, good morning, glad you're listening. We have Accent Care in the house. And by that we mean two people. We have Carlos Ramirez, and we have Bobby Rupal. And I'm warming up on this stuff. And Accent Care is a home health service agency, kind of, sort of, and they've got a much better explanation. Carlos, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. Accent Care Home Health is a home health agency. We're home certified by Medicare, and we usually get, obviously, reimbursed by Medicare, private insurance, and Medi-Cal, Medicaid. The company has been here in El Centro for over 15 years, formerly known as Home Choice. It was a privately owned company.
Okay.
And was bought by Accent Care about 7 years ago. We've been working very hard to try to serve our community. There's other home health agencies in the community too, but obviously we're here to represent ourselves and hopefully to let our audience know that we're available if they have any home health care needs for their family. Especially, we take care of a very large senior population, people with different, the problem with home health or their qualification for home health, the patient has to be homebound, which means the patient is not able to be driving and going up and down on a daily basis like most people will do. When it's hard for them, it's a taxing effort to leave their home. That's when home health is able to go into their home and assist them with wound care, medical procedures. And also here with Bobby today, we're going to be talking about the behavioral health program that we have.
Yeah, when you talk about home health care services, I usually think about senior citizens. Senior citizens,
yes.
You know.
People way older than us, basically.
Yes.
You know, more than, like, 90. Well, it's because my dad's 80, so he's pretty healthy. You know, so I don't consider him.
Like fifth,
I don't
the fifth
consider
year
him,
of life, okay?
Well, I don't consider him, you know, an elderly senior. I don't at
I
all.
Probably, that's
what
I like you. It's, you get all these presents on Christmas.
So, yeah, you know, maybe 90 plus.
Well, the truth is, I mean, talking about the Medicare population, is usually people over 65 years old. Now,
oh, my gosh, that's so young.
Yes, and nowadays it is. I mean, the average age for male, I've read this about 5-6 years ago, was 70 years in America. And the average dying age for a female was 75, so women get 5 years extra than male for some reason.
That's still young.
But, you know, nowadays with so much advances in medicine, you know, people are able to live longer, more treatments for cancer and other diseases, you know, have helped increase the age of living in America.
So typically senior citizens are 65 years old or older, but that's not your whole service population, is it?
Correct. We have some people that has had the misfortune of having a bad accident that are quadriplegic, and they may be young. So mm-hmm. obviously if there's something we can do for that kind of population, we also, you know, take care of them. By a lot of these kind of individuals with accidents, that some kind of neurological accident, strokes, we have to do like monthly Foley catheter changes, mm-hmm. or they may have a colostomy bag, some kind of feeding tube. So those people, even though they're younger, they require...
I could tell you're a nurse because you could just like say that stuff
I
and
know.
People are facing. That's
I
good.
Know. But I read somewhere, I can't remember where, it was in the internet or a magazine or somewhere, about the population, how much it's being changed, especially...
those darn
baby
boomers.
No, the... You know, you guys go to their homes, but there's a large growing population that, you know, care services, a 24-hour, you know, it's a residential, and there's so many younger people ending up there surrounded by elderly people.
Yes.
And how depressing it is for them because they can't be taken care of at home because either their family member, their loved one has to work, and they don't have these services that you guys are offering, and so they have to end up being, you know, placed in a
convalescent home.
Exactly, a convalescent home. And, you know, they say that, you know, they're feeling depressed because, you know, all they're surrounded by people who every day somebody passes away.
Correct.
You know, and they're young because of an accident. They end up being there. You know, well, this is a good...
That would be an odd fit, wouldn't it?
Yes, and that's what they're saying, that they're, you know, they're getting depressed because, you know, they just... They can't take care of themselves at home, and their loved one can't take care of them because they're working, or themselves are also maybe the mother or something. They're older and they can't take care of them. But they don't have that option that you guys are offering.
Correct.
You know, the services of you going into their home.
Correct. With home health, many times I have to explain to our patients and their families, they get confused thinking that home health is, oh, I'm gonna get a nurse and it's gonna be here all day, so I can go to Walmart or somewhere else and do my shopping. Mm-hmm. And we have to explain to them, our visits are temporary.
Not respite, though.
No, we're not respite. And what we do is we will take care for, you know, it depends on the patients, usually between an hour to 2 hours time.
Mm-hmm.
And although our visits are regulated, too, we can just say, okay, I'm going to be going to this patient's home every day. Mm-hmm. We have to explain and justify why we're going to visit the patient. Does this patient really need to be seen by a nurse so often? And you were bringing a very good point about the depression on these patients. We had this late-life depression management program, which Bobby started 3 years ago.
And he looks so young.
I know. And that's something that is kind of new in the home health business, because nobody was thinking behavior. You know, we were discussing this earlier before the show started, that many people don't think about behavioral health as being a medical problem. You kind of get either discriminated or thinking that's something else. You just walk it off. You know, it's going to go away.
Walk it off.
Get over it.
Yes. And I would like Bobby to explain a little bit more about the late-life depression.
Thank you, Carlos.
Good morning, Bobby.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you. Once again, thank you very much for having us here. And what I wanted to address a point earlier that you made about people moving into retirement homes or independent communities, they're called, but they're sort of homes for people who at an early age retire because they don't have help at home. Accent Care actually has a division which we call personal care division, in which we send people to clients' homes to take care of them on either shift basis if they need to stay and live in, or go there for 4 hours, give them a shower or bath, or take them to the doctor's appointment. We have that. Accent Care provides that.
Is this like in-home supportive services? Is it equivalent to in-home supportive services?
It's equivalent, but it's not in this area.
Yeah,
it's not available in this area, and we're thinking of, you know, I'm just so anthem.
But you do, sir. The Accent provides those services.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, with regards to behavioral health program, we have a late-life depression management program. Late-life depression... you know, I know your dad is 80 years old, and you don't think he's old. But generally, when you talk about late life, you're talking about 65 plus. That's sort of a line in the sand to differentiate people from
our elders from
from us. So, what we have in this program is what we learned, that people who are homebound because of, when you get older, there's a lot of diseases that come along, and sometimes people have arthritis or diabetes and heart disease, and it limits their mobility. And in addition to that, when you get older, your muscles get weaker, you can't go out so much. So what happens is people become less outgoing. They can't go to movies anymore. They can't go to dinner anymore.
Gradual process. Sometimes.
Gradual process of
cancer. And another thing, their loved ones begin to pass away too.
That's true. So there's a lot of things that take place and a lot of changes. And in order to cope with all these changes, you have to have the strength. And the depression is a normal part of aging. Not just aging. I think depression is actually a normal part of being a human being. Anytime you have some sort of event take place in your life, whether that be financial loss or physical loss or a loved one's loss, you're going to go through depression, whether or not you accept it or you stay in denial. How you want to deal with it is up to you. So when you're getting older, it's actually harder to deal with depression, because sometimes when we're younger, what we call the situational depression or transient depression, when you're younger, you go through depression, but you move on very quickly because you have so many responsibilities. You have to go to work. You have to take care of your kids. You have all these things going on, and they keep you busy, your mind busy, because depression is a disease of mind. So you don't pay attention to a lot of things, and you have to move on. What happens when you get older and you're retired and you're living in a retired community, or you're living at home alone and you're homebound, then your coping skills, they don't work well.
Well, and your busyness may be gone.
Yes.
Your busyness is gone. So it's very difficult for an elderly to cope with all these new changes in their life and deal with the depression as well. So for that, we have developed this late life depression management program, which is available in this community. So we have psychiatric nurses who go to patients' homes once a week to do an hour-long therapy with them and teach them coping skills, help them manage their disease processes, help them be compliant with their medications. Compliance is very important, because what happens is, let's say you get diagnosed with diabetes, and you have to make major, major changes in your diet. In your diet. And you have to implement exercise.
We don't have to, but it's strongly suggested by the medical profession.
Yes.
And there's a pretty strong evidence base that suggests that if you don't, bad things happen.
Yeah. And your doctor will be very unhappy with you if you don't.
Right.
Right? So what happens, so you have to make all these changes, then you have to learn to cope with the disease that you just got diagnosed with. So all these changes, they bring a lot of depression and anxiety. Anxiety brings depression, because your inability to cope with your circumstances is causing anxiety, and then it furthers your frustrations and makes you depressed.
Well, and if your coping mechanism for your diabetes was a double quarter pounder with an extra large Coke or something, you're in a world of hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you've got your fallback plans gone, huh?
That's a very good point, especially for us working with a large Hispanic population. Many times we get diets, or we were getting diets and trying to tell, a Hispanic person, don't eat this because usually these diets are done genetically for, just a general diet. And many of those things, Hispanics don't even eat them. So it's like, they don't have to change much from this list, but the pozole, the tortillas, and any other greasy foods that they should be avoiding, we need to really personalize it to them. And it's hard to change habits that they have for 40, 50 years and tell somebody you can't eat that anymore or that amount anymore. And that's a big challenge.
Well, and I'll even throw out a bonus on this one. You've got people with home health issues, which means they're a little bit less flexible, a little bit less out in the streets and stuff like that. And you've got people who are probably economically challenged. I mean, this isn't your well-to-do population. They're right over in the spa in La Jolla getting personalized treatment. You know how that goes.
Well, right. I mean,
let me go back to this. So now you've got a person who's economically challenged, mm-hmm. has limited mobility and limited ability to cook and stuff like that. Boy, your dollar meal is starting to look really good.
Yes.
Fast food.
Yes.
And
that's
now,
exactly
and fast
right.
food's like a killer.
That's a very good point. Eating healthy costs more money than not eating healthy.
Well, I mean, if you live in a – if your social economic, you're in the bottom, just in the bottom portion, and you're limited in your funds, and which a lot of the elderly people are limited in the funds,
exactly.
They don't have mobility, or if they can't walk, where they live close by, there's no market where they provide fresh food, vegetables, fish. They have to travel farther to get that. So that,
I have to put on reading glasses to chop things up now. Okay,
you don't know how bad that is. It depends,
It
depends where you live and your access, your mobility, because a lot of the times where there's, low income, there's no markets that provide fresh fruit and vegetables.
Not only that, actually, if you are suffering from anxiety and depression, even though you have access to food and all the things in your fridge, but you don't have the energy to get up and cook.
That's true.
So it's less likely that you will make all those changes. You don't have the motivation to go and take a walk and take care of yourself. So, it's really devastating disease. And I'm going to share a story with you. It's a very famous study done by on elephants. It's called Elephant Study. It was done in New York and London. They follow these Western African elephants, and they did some studies on them, and they learned that a Western African elephant in a zoo in the Western world, which is, you know, very rich world,
here,
they provide all the amenities. They live 17 years of age on average. And then they did they followed up on Western African elephants who live in the wild, and they figured that they were actually living 53 years of age. So three times the age in the wild, where the predators are there, the food is in short supply, and they don't have all the comforts, they don't have the doctors, the veterinarians giving mm-hmm. immunization injections and all that stuff. So, and
the parties are better, though, right?
The parties are better. I think that's what really matters. Parties are better. So what they figured out, that elephants actually have free will. And if they're not freely allowed to roam around, they will die sooner. If you apply the same theory, and they are applying the same theory to humans, if you're homebound and you can't go out and you can't do things that you want to do, you tend to die early. So having depression could actually decrease your age. So it's really devastating. In UCLA, they followed about 89 patients for 7 years. And what they did, there's a scale called geriatric depression scale. And on that scale, you measure the amount of depression a client has. So there's about 15 questions on that scale. And if you score higher or 7, that means depression is present. And if you score less than 6, that means there's no depression. Mm-hmm. So they followed these 89 patients for 7 years in a cross-sectional study, and they found out that the clients who scored 7 or greater, 50% of them died in 18 months. Okay.
Ooh, it's like tarot cards, isn't it?
I know.
It is a tarot card. And the people who scored less than 6, they actually went on to live, on average, 5 years. You know, so that's
I am so testing
one.
My geriatric
I know.
Parents from
I
now
know.
On every
I should
month.
Do that. I should do that too.
Yeah, it's really important to ask your parents that how are they feeling? Are they depressed? I have a personal story to tell you. I actually my wife's grandfather, he died last year at the age of 92 from cancer.
Wow.
And what happened? He was very healthy actually at 92. He was still walking around. At last stage, we found out that he had cancer, so he only lasted, after the diagnosis, he only lasted about 6 months. But, you know, during this process, I asked him, I'm being the nurse in the house, I asked him one day, I said, Grandpa, are you scared at all? He said, so he's 92 years old, I've never seen him cry. So he started crying. He says, you know, I don't know what's going to happen to me. This is really scary. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, I'm being a psychiatric nurse that I am, I never took the time to ask him before how he feels, how the diagnosis are making him feel, because I do this so often with my other clients and my patients, and to enable them to express their feelings about the diagnosis and how it's affecting them. But I actually ignored somebody I'm really close mm-hmm. to. So you know, when you mentioned that I need to talk to my parents, it's actually essential that you do, that you ask them how mm-hmm. it's all these changes, if they're going through surgeries, if they're going through some new diagnosis. It could be as little as high blood pressure, you know. So you want to make sure that they're not in denial. They're mm-hmm. not... they're taking their medication. You know, I most of the time when somebody gets diagnosed, and I've seen this many times, you know, you have high cholesterol and doctor prescribes you medication. You know, the medication the doctor prescribes, you take the prescription, you put it in your drawer, and you don't feel it. What you do, you start looking at like natural stuff. I'm gonna do the natural way. Mm-hmm. You know. What?
Garlic.
No, yeah, that yeah. Or, you know, I'm going to change
you guys
the way I eat.
Is it that obvious?
You know, so what happens is you never take the treatment that's prescribed yeah. to you, and that 2-3 years you do the other remedies and all that stuff, mm-hmm. but those remedies are preventive. If you've been diagnosed, you need to take care of it. You need to take an active treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So then you don't take the Crestor or whatever the doctor's provided for you, but you take these other remedies. That's you're in denial. You deny the disease, and when then 2-3 years later, when it gets worse, then you said, okay, you know what? Now I need to take medication.
Sometimes it's too late.
Yeah, sometimes it's too late.
337-8874 is the phone number. We're here talking all things old right now with Accent Care.
Not necessarily
home
old.
That's right. Home Care, Accent Care is a home health agency. And we're here with Bobby Rupal and Carlos Ramirez. Bobby, I want to go back to the depression thing for just so what we've got is we've got this predominantly geriatric population that has its own unique set of developmental challenges, if you will, associated with aging. And then we've got your population that has an additional layer of challenge because somehow have this home health issue, regardless of that issue. Do you find depressions fairly common amongst them because of these kind of layered stressors that I guess they're experiencing?
Yeah, you know, It's interesting that you use the word unique, because that's actually what I want to emphasize before I address your question whether or not it's common. Uniqueness, generally depression is unique. The general symptoms for depression is lack of concentration, insomnia, that you're not able to sleep, you're not hungry, you're tearful all the time, and you're having all these symptoms, anxiety and sadness. This geriatric population that we have, depression is unique and its symptoms are unique.
It expresses itself differently.
And very differently, actually.
How different?
It expresses itself in physical symptoms. They will constantly complain about stomach pain or body aches. Or they will never say, I'm depressed, I'm anxious. You know, whereas your kids will tell you, Dad, I'm anxious. Or Mom, I'm anxious. You know, I'm depressed.
So it turns into somatic expression.
Very somatic form. You're right, actually. It's a very somatic form. And matter of fact, the new diagnosis book that's coming out for the geriatric population, they have changed, they're trying to change the symptoms that will qualify as major depression. And they're including all the bodily somatic complaints and aches.
Mm-hmm.
And majority of the time, doctors actually don't pick it up because they think the patient's getting old and all these diseases are taking place because the system is getting old.
Non-specific pains have had this history of being kind of thrown under the rug anyway. I mean,
well,
fibromyalgia.
Exactly. Sometimes, like, their primary care doctor, give them, like, medication for pain instead of looking at the depression.
Exactly. And what I have seen is a lot of times Celebrex and Prevacid, because they complain about stomach pains.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no organic reason for it. There's no disease process that's taking place in the stomach, but they constantly complain about it. They complain about the neck. So, and majority of the time, the doctor will also say, okay, I'm going to give you this anti-anxiety pill, an Ativan or Xanax, 0.5. Just take it. It's going to make you feel
nice
better.
Nice doctor.
Right? Nice doctor. But, you know, that will only put a Band-Aid on it. It doesn't really solve the problem, because the problem is, you know, depression, you need...
Now, not only are you housebound, but you're couchbound.
Yeah, because it actually, that's like taking, a little shot.
It's like a nice warm blanket, you know. Snuggle up and sit down.
Yeah, so that's... And now, so it's unique in a sense in this geriatric population. And as a society, we're making changes to accommodate what's taking place in this population. But on the other hand, commonality, it's very common, and unfortunately, it's underdiagnosed, it's under-treated.
Because it's hiding in this midst of all these
with the pain.
Medical problems, yeah.
Yeah, so what you see is, you know, actually there's about 30% people in the over-the-age of population that are actually taking antidepressant. But antidepressant is not the only answer for this. And that's where we have this program that really comes in handy. We work with the physicians to have antidepressants, because antidepressants actually elevate your mood. But if your mood is elevated, that's not necessarily going to solve all the things that you're going through. You also need therapy. Therapy is an essential part, and that's what we do. Our nurses go and do therapy on a weekly basis.
Well, how can you? I mean, you say it. your mood is elevated. Well, now the mood is elevated, but still they can't move.
If you're happy and you know it.
You know, they can't move.
Isn't that enough?
Their mobility is constrained because of real physical issues.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And not only that, if majority of the antidepressants are what they call SSRIs. Mm-hmm. They're selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. And they work on your serotonin by increasing the level of serotonin in your brain. So what happens is when you get older, your brain's natural release of serotonin declines. So if you're working on the presumption that there's going to be serotonin and there's less serotonin, it's not that helpful. So, I mean, we didn't know these things. We're learning as we're growing older. Our population's getting grayer. So these things are coming into light.
It kind of begs to differ then. If your serotonin levels are already decreasing with age, then maybe there's kind of a normalcy to that process that, you know, it's like kind of like, you know, we're all guys here, so we can talk about guy stuff. My testosterone level's lower than you two because I'm older than you two. Well, actually, tired, but I didn't want to brag over the air. You know how that is. But I guess my point being is that we can try and you know, put my 50-year-old body back into a 25-year-old weightlifting, you know, whatever. Although that would probably do weird things to my hairline. But I can basically accept that this is a different part of my life. I'm in a different type of body, and maybe when I'm fortunate enough to hit 80. I'll be able to sit there with my reduced serotonin levels and say, hey, you know what? It's okay because it's a part of the process and not have to kind of tinker with it. I don't know.
Exactly. A very good point, actually. And that's where therapy is very, very important.
Because it tricks the negative thinking, isn't it?
Yeah. So you want to teach them coping mechanisms, not necessarily fix them with pills, you know. Mm-hmm. So you want to teach them coping mechanisms. You want to teach them how to deal with these situations and help them develop the courage to deal with these disease processes and age and sort of age gracefully rather than being depressed.
If I may add something too, is just that even though we're talking about all these good things that can improve someone's life, talking about depression, many patients are not ready to admit they have depression because they will see it as a sign of weakness or something that they're going to be discriminated mm-hmm. against. So that's another, I guess the first barrier for us to break will be to identify a patient, because when we do, when we get a new case, a new referral from a patient getting out of the hospital or from a doctor's office, we send one of the registered nurses to do an evaluation. It's an 18-page document, Skull and Oasis, which checks every aspect of the patient's life, from who's going to be helping you in the home, how much can you do at home, what is your homebound status, how much medication do you take, who helps you with the medication. And we have an area which actually assesses for depression. When the nurse is, we're doing the PHQ-2 assessment tool for depression. If the nurses evaluate and see that the patient is scoring high on that scale, then we do an automatic referral to our home health behavioral health nurse, who will then follow up and see if the patient is, number one, he will do a more in-depth evaluation to really detect where the problems are. And then ask the patient if they're willing to go with the program and willing to participate. Some people may say, no, I don't need that. I'm not crazy. Or, I don't need a psychologist or psychiatrist. And that's why we call our behavioral health nurse, instead of calling them the psychiatric nurse, which tends to have a negative,
connotation.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so what we can do then, let's top the hour. Let's take a short break. This is Let's Talk About It, your voice of wellness here in the Imperial Valley. And we'll come back with Carlos and Bobby and Accent Care, and we'll kind of break down this whole kind of coaching therapy thing that
they do
with, mm-hmm. with their home health bomb people. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back after the short break.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM Radio Bilingue.
Welcome back. You're still listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with Scott and Maria. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. And also, this is a great show. You can access this show through our podcast at kxoradio.com and click on the podcast.
You know it's a great show.
Because
we call it out halfway through the show.
Yes, because we're getting a lot of good information.
Yeah, definitely. If you get a chance to listen in, call this morning, call. But the other thing is Maria's suggesting, bookmark this baby and catch it back on the website, because in particular if you've got elderly people with medical stuff going on
or
in
yourself.
Their lives. This is some good information coming up. So we are here today with our extended family. That's what it says on the card. It says Accent Care, your extended family.
That's
so
right.
So my cousins today, Carlos Ramirez and Bobby Rupal, and they are administrators for this Accent Care program, which is a home health care program. But specifically kind of what we dialed into today is they have a geriatric behavioral health thing that they do, mostly focused on depression for senior citizens. So if that's your cup of tea, hang on and get ready to ride out this last 24 minutes of show, because so far lots of information's come out. So, you know, I wanted to kind of dive into some of the particulars because as you mentioned, Bobby, before we went to break, you know, the role of medication is an important role, but without, in your model, without this kind of behavioral coaching or without this therapy, it's not quite a complete model. Look, can we dive into you walk into people's houses once a week and say, you know, because I saw the commercial with, like, the drill sergeant guy.
As the, with the clinic, the clinic.
Yeah, and now I totally get therapy. I never really understood.
First of all, maybe when you get there, we're in a largely Hispanic population here in the Imperial Valley, and sometimes.
Ooh, yeah, play the culture card.
No,
it's there.
Well, it is, but you know, just like family members, they don't want anybody coming through their home. You're not family, or you're an outsider. You're not welcome in my home.
That is true. That is true.
Before you start providing any type of therapy and services.
what we have learned through our experience that it doesn't actually, culture has some implications. But to behavioral health, there's general stigma.
Even then, it doesn't matter.
No
culture likes it. And I think the part of the problem is because people think that having to go through depression is actually a shortcoming in your personality. And that's why, you know, when I do these talks and I educate people about depression, I tend to focus a lot of on the chemicals and the structure of the brain that's and the pathways and the communication that's taking place in our brain. So part of the reason is because we feel depressed, because the way our brain is structured, it's part of our DNA. We're wired to be depressed so we can actually respond to things in a different fashion. So let's say if your paycheck is less than your mortgage, you know, obviously a reason to be depressed. So what happens, we call it a situational depression. What it requires you to do is actually requires you to take some steps in your life, make changes so that this depression, the situational depression that you have come across with your own actions, it goes away. So you have to either sell the home, refinance, move into a smaller apartment, move into your parents, whatever you need to
marry
do.
Somebody rich.
Marry somebody rich.
Get three jobs.
Yeah. So
go to the racetrack.
That's another way to be depressed.
Maladaptive coping,
yes. So what do? You actually take care of the situation. So depression actually pushes you into that direction. But with the late life depression, that situation is not, that coping skill does not help you.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is because let's say you're 85 years old or 75 years old, you live in an assisted living facility or you live in your own home, and you are depressed because you got diagnosed with diabetes, and you know the next thing you know is losing sensation in your lower part of your body, your feet and your lower legs, and you can't stand up and you fall and you break your hip. So you basically learn to deal with one disease,
and then you have something.
Then you have a second one, you know, and then you have a third. Either your loved one dies, or you know, and a lot of people I have dealt with or I have helped overcome depression is sometimes. If their kids die because of cancer or heart disease, you know, and it's just to us as human beings, it's an unnatural process.
So it's like the end of the game of Monopoly, and every time you roll your dice, you land on somebody else's hotel, and it's just one kind of negative occurrence after another.
That's actually
ouch.
Yeah. Ouch. And that's why it's so very important to this issue of late life depression is really, really important. So, because all these things that take you on and they come in your way as you're growing older and you think, gosh, what am I going to do? And
what does today hold? Mm-hmm. Goodness gracious.
So what else is going to happen?
So all these changes, and they show up in statistics. So every day, about 17 people over the age of 65 successfully commit suicide in the United States. Now, that is a very high rate. And their success rate, actually, the statistics show that if you're 75 years old and you attempt suicide, you're 50% of the time you're going to be successful. If you're 85, this is 75 times.
Or you're going to complete. Probably that's better than saying successful, maybe.
Okay, complete mm-hmm. the process. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a complete.
Well, I mean, for them, they're just like, okay, you know, I have diabetes. I have, you know, my loved ones have died. I'm by myself.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like.
And they have the tools. They take average Medicare beneficiary, which is over the age of 65, takes about 6 to 7 medications. They're diagnosed with 4 to 5 diseases. So they have medications that can actually take their life away. So you have to be constantly in touch. You have to be constantly in check with them. Because, you know, let's say you take Coumadin, which is a blood thinner, you take it, you overdose on it, and this is it. You know, you have internal bleeding.
Or you wake up and you have even more problems. Ooh.
Exactly.
Ouch.
Yeah, but I have, you know, this phenomena of late life depression is just it's
so the bad things are happening faster than the person's ability to cope and adapt.
Yeah.
Right. So when we go to their homes, and to answer your question, come back to that. So when we go to their home, it's really hard to communicate with them that this is what they need. But again, we take a gentle approach. We call our nurses life skilled mm-hmm. nurses. They're not behavioral health nurses or psychiatric nurses because that's the word everybody runs away mm-hmm. from. So they're life skilled nurses. We teach them skills to deal with daily life things and the grind, daily grind. So we sort of play with the words and use that kind of stuff to educate because the purpose is to get them help. And mm-hmm. sometimes they are their own worst enemies and they don't want to help even though they think they need it. But it's just really hard to come out and say, hey, I need some help. So, and especially when you're depressed and you think nobody cares in the world for you. So it's really a difficult situation. So we try to do it in a very gentle manner. And once we are in to try to help them, I have seen some tremendous changes in people's lives. I've been a nurse for 11 years, and the majority of the time I've been a behavioral health nurse. Depression is a disease that I have come across is the most debilitating disease I've ever seen.
And it affects all ages.
All ages. It doesn't matter. Even animals.
You know, I'm thinking with I guess my own experiences with the aging and
with your aging,
their stuff. Yeah, that too. it's probably validation is probably one of the more difficult things, but one of the more foundational things is an intervention that we can do with elderly people and just say, you know, it must not feel very good to be going through whatever you're going through. And it's hard for us to say that.
Yeah, and that's where the therapy part comes in. See, any psychiatric or behavioral health disorder that we suffer from as human beings, there's two-prong approach. One approach is to medication. Mm-hmm. So you actually deal with if you have psychosis, you deal with the psychosis part, and if you have depression, you mm-hmm. deal with the serotonin part. But the second part is therapy. Now, we all need to talk because we're social animals. And we are put in...
some more than others. some more than others.
Right? So we need a way to communicate, an outlet to express ourselves. And once we block that and we sort of we become an inward person, and it's not helpful. So when we have somebody, these elderly, they're stranded at home, they can't drive out, and you can't reach out to them, then guess what? Their situation is going to get worse. They're not. So the therapy part, going to their home and talking to them and helping them solve their problems, even though majority of the time you're not going to be able to resolve their issues, but you're going to facilitate a change that will actually trigger some sort of reaction in their own thinking process, and that will enable them to think that it's worth living.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth living, and they actually look forward to talk to you on a weekly basis and say, oh, my nurse is coming today, and I want to talk about this. We help them with writing journals, and then we use techniques. There are different techniques like cognitive behavior therapy, mm-hmm. problem-solving therapy, grief therapy. So there are all these things that we implement into our program, and we have steps. For example, we'll have first 2 months we'll have a trust building activities. So that because trust is really important for to have a therapeutic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So the nurse will build trust with the client and talk about and allow the client to verbalize. I mean, I have sat across people who are in their late 80s. They talk to me about how they were molested when they were 14 years old. And they have never talked to anybody about it.
And it's always kept a shadow over who they were.
Right?
All those years,
they held it inside, you know. But because nobody actually acknowledged that this could happen, mm-hmm. and if they tried to talk to somebody, they said, no, don't talk about your grandpa like that, right? So those kind of things. And
you get eight sessions, and you're going once a week, right?
Once a week, 2 months, yes, at a time, mm-hmm. because that's the way home health is structured.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2-month-long episode. If there's need, longer need, we will go there. We'll recertify what we call recertification.
And also remember, some of these patients, besides the behavioral health, they're being seen for nursing things such as wound care or diabetes complications.
Their medical issues.
They may have some mobility problems, so they're getting physical therapy. So we try not to overwhelm the patient with everybody going to their home mm-hmm. every day. So we usually start with the more important or, you know, things that need to be fixed right away, which is getting them up from the bed because they had a surgery, and have the nurse communicate to the doctor their progress, and then after a few weeks...
So you're phasing in and out on some sort of triage system,
the various
holistic needs of this person.
Exactly.
Do you also link them to other resources out in the community?
Yes. Part of the process when we call it opening a case, start of care, obviously is the introduction of our services, having the patient and the family agree that they want to receive the services. They had to sign a bunch of consents.
Getting their benefits in order, that's probably like step one, right? Because you guys aren't going to take like chickens, are you?
No. And
got some chilies growing in the backyard.
Yes.
No, you need to have Medi-Cal or Medicare first and foremost.
Correct. Or private insurance. And with private insurance, I don't want to say a gamble, but it's like we don't control
sometimes,
that. It's
yeah.
up to them. Does the insurance cover
yeah.
this? And if they don't, we talk to the patient and say, you know what, you have a copay. It's up to you guys if you think you're going to be able to afford it. I must say we do community services sometimes, meaning if a doctor calls me, I really need you to see this patient, has no insurance, and we'll do an exception on, you know, at least a first visit to educate the patient and give him a bunch of brochures on things that are available. A lot of people don't know what's out there in the community for services,
true.
For meals.
That's why we're here.
Exactly.
This radio show.
Exactly. And one thing they were mentioning earlier, many times when people, let's say it's an 80-year-old patient diagnosed with a stroke from the hospital, so now their whole left side of the body is paralyzed. And especially in the Hispanic population, we never want to send our family members to the convalescent.
Oh, no.
That's unacceptable.
Yeah, it ain't,
but,
ain't good in my house.
But,
no,
but,
not in my house
a lot
either.
Of these people don't realize that when they bring them home, this is a full-time job. And if they have full-time jobs, it's bound to be unsuccessful. These people will require diaper changes every 2 or 3 hours. And it's not like having a baby diaper change. Having an adult diaper change is a totally different experience. And not everybody is different, you know, is willing or capable.
You do that
this.
So well.
including, you know, having a Foley catheter and all these other
yeah.
things that for us is like, this is our job. For some other people, it's like, wait a minute, I'm not used to seeing my mom in this condition and having to do all these things. So
you thought an oil change on a 65 Chevy was one thing. Now you're working with a BMW. It's like a whole other game.
Different thing, yeah. And so that we find that a lot too. That a lot of them, like I say, you know, they usually bite more when they can chew because they didn't realize this was
with good intentions. Mm-hmm.
Yes, with good intentions, of course. And we guide them on that process too. You know, maybe it's time for you to let go, and your mom will be better taken care of in a convalescent home with 24-hour care. Because at home, you working 8 hours and coming back and checking on her or paying some neighbor to come and see her every, you know, it could be a...
You know, you're talking, you know, I'm looking at you, and it's like if you're talking to me, I'm like, no, I'm still here. No convalescent.
And we all that a personal experience, too. My grandma, she started developing Alzheimer's about 6 years ago, and from being a normal person that could talk and everything. I went to see her a few weeks ago. She's living in India and in a convalescent because my aunt was taking care of one of her daughters. She had 13 kids, so, you know, there was enough kids to take care of grandma. But she started getting really bad deteriorating. You know, she was starting to take off her clothes everywhere, going to the bathroom anywhere, not necessarily in the bathroom, public places. So it was too much to handle for somebody with no medical training and also to have the full-time
safety,
job. Of
also safety.
Exactly. So eventually, you know, it came down to everybody saying, you need to take her to a coma. It's not that you don't love your family member. It's not that you're bad. It's just it's time to let the professional, somebody that is, will be in better hands.
And that's something that for me personally, that's something I'm going to have to deal with or, you know, when I hope I don't get to that point.
But. Well, another point that we didn't discuss is advance directives. In the United States, is something that has been on for about 10 years now. You know, when you go to the hospital, the first question they ask you, do you have advance directives? And what is that?
Yes,
well, does somebody know what you want to do if in case you have a bad
Who's in charge of you if you're not?
And many people avoid that topic because, nobody wants to talk about that. I mean, even with the political recent events, you know, Sarah Palin was talking to the death panels when I'm thinking, that's good. Then you want to know who's going to be responsible of making decisions after you had a bad stroke and you're not able to say your wishes. Some people say, if I have a bad stroke or a heart attack, let me go. I don't want to be connected tubes here and be in 3 years in a bed with no... And that's a personal choice. To me, I think it's a personal choice. If you want to be like that, that's your choice. If you say, let me go, that's your choice. Meaning don't do intervention.
But you got to make sure whoever you give the advance directive power to isn't just kind of gaming you to get the power. Then they're going to do what they want
to
do.
Probably millionaires have to worry about that. But it's very important and it's something that I'm hoping that eventually everybody comes to turn. You know, right now is the time when we're healthy to discuss. I mean, with my fiance, we discussed this already. She's a nurse too. And we discussed if this happens to me, this is what I want to be done. You know, obviously, I still have to do the next step, which is actually notarize it and have this is my wishes and she will make. To avoid cases on those, like the one that was on the news recently, what was the name of that young girl, Chobo?
Shivo.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That she has spoken to her husband and she said, you know, if I was ever in this condition, let me go. But they kept her alive for like 15 years. And when he said, you know, I think I should follow her wishes. The family was totally angry with this guy, but he was really following the wishes of the patient, not what the family wants.
It gets complicated.
Correct.
If you don't put your wishes down, legal, notarized, and everything.
Exactly. And I see so many.
Well, and honestly, today I am not sure.
I'm sure.
And I work in the ER for 10 years as staff nurse, and I mean, I saw so many, especially big families that everybody.
Oh yeah.
Half the family wants
patient diagnosed with cancer came in really bad
consensus,
shape.
Consensus. Hard.
Most likely won't make
hard
it.
Hard deal.
And you get the son from Washington just showed up, and even though 20 family members say it's time to let go of grandpa, he shows. Oh no. Let's intubate him, and everybody's like, "What's good?" So now, what do we do? Because we don't want to have a confrontation here, yet we want to respect the patient's wishes. And a lot of doctors and nurses get in the middle of that for not having a written document that said, "This is what I want. I don't care what my family says. You let me."
So when you go in there, you talk about all this.
Yes, that's part of our assessment. When we open any new case, we ask the patients, have you had an advance directive? They say, yes, we ask for a copy, so we have it in our record. So in case they call, there's an emergency, we know if the patient wanted to go to the hospital or they wanted to stay home and die in peace.
And if they haven't, then you assist them with
that
process
if they
want to.
We also have social services. We have a medical social worker, and we make an order for a visit so they can discuss any financial problems or death and dying issues and stuff. When the patient are really close to death and dying, then we need to evaluate those. This patient will be served better at hospice care, and that's when we also do a transfer to hospice. If that will be the best. Now, the goal with home health, and that's what we explain to our patients, is a temporary service. We don't want to keep the patients forever because obviously we want to get them to a better level than where they were, and if they reach those goals, then it's time for them to be discharged. And we have a few patients that we had them for years because, again, of very devastating diagnosis of
long-term chronic
correct.
Conditions.
Correct. And we see them like once a month for Foley catheter changes and things like that, making sure that there's have no skin breakdown, which is one of the biggest complications on people that are bedbound, having the cubitus ulcers that can go from a simple blister to a big stage 4 bed ulcer. That could be deadly. That's what actually killed Christopher Reeve, the Superman guy. he wasn't the fractured neck and all that. He was from what I understood,
yes,
he was
an
infected decubitus ulcer.
Wow.
And he had the money and the funds to
possibly
live for a long time with good care, but a simple thing such as a wound ulcer will actually be a catastrophic situation.
But again, you know, we're talking about elderly, but not just elderly. It's also the young people that might end up with a, probably like you said earlier, an accident, and they end up quadriplegic.
Right. Yeah. You know, Carlos brings a really good point about family involvement. And there is actually a term we call caregiver depression. When you bring somebody home and they require so much of you and you have to be a 24-hour care provider, so they actually tend to drain your resources. And if you're the only person taking care of them, the rest of your family's working, then it becomes very difficult for you because it's a 24-hour job and you don't have any help. So you tend to get depressed because there's no end to it. And so for that, we also provide services for that, and we recognize that there's a caregiver depression and the caregiver needs a break, and we provide services to them. So when you were talking, when Carlos was talking about having to move your parents to convalescent home, and you know, I saw the expression in your face like, oh, I hope I don't have to make that decision one day. But that is also a need for intervention by a psychiatric or behavioral health professional, because the guilt and the sadness and the depression that comes along by making such a difficult decision, whether should I make my mom move to a place where I don't really approve of, and you lived with this notion all your life, and now you actually have to act against it because you saw other people moving their parents and you never approved of it. But now the situation is such, like Carlos' grandma, who is, you know, walking around without clothes and then using places for bathroom that is not actually a bathroom. So it becomes very difficult for you, and you come to realization that I need to let this hand this torch to people who are actually professionals and trained to take care of people like my grandma. But how do you come to that decision? And then everybody in the family sort of starts to question that. Oh, maybe I can take her for a week. Maybe you can take her for a week. Then you have this grandma walking from one home to the second home to the third home.
No wonder she can't find the bathroom.
Holy man. Exactly. So those are very difficult issues. Mm-hmm. And those issues come with life expectancy that we have. I actually read recently the insurance companies that project your life before they give you life insurance, they're projecting life to 120 now. So that's what they expect.
To how much?
120.
Wow.
So that's, they're expecting us to live. That's how long they're expecting us to live. So, you know.
I want to be 120.
Well, that's their risk manager worst case scenario thing.
Yeah.
But
I'm just looking, how am I going to look at that?
Well, we'll get to Beverly Hills Plastic Surgery. You look fine.
We have the technology.
We have the technology. Right? So those are the issues that are going to keep coming up, and all these things we're going to have to deal with as a society. So that's why, you know, we feel very passionately about addressing the issue of depression and addressing the issue of coping skills.
Hey, Bobby, we're almost out of time, but are you guys keeping track of your depression and your scores and stuff on this stuff? What kind of outcomes are you seeing?
Yes, we do. Actually, that's a really good question, because there are scales that are developed by psychologists, and one I mentioned earlier, geriatric depression scale. Then we use a scale called Hamilton Anxiety Scale.
Mm-hmm.
Then we also use a test called the Mini Mental Exam, which is developed by some psychologists about 50 years ago. So we use all these scales. So let's say we have a client who we take on, and they, on admission, they scored 16 or 13 on a depression scale. And then we do the same scale 2 months later, and we see if the score has come down to 9 or score has come down to 11. Or on Hamilton Anxiety Scale, for example, if you score 26, you're very anxious. So if your score is not coming down to 20s and 19s, then we have to change our interventions and continue the therapy. So we have all these scales that we use to measure the progress. Yes.
And do you see that as being then an effective modality of treatment? As so, I don't know, how long have you been doing this? this component.
This particular program we have in place for 4 years. We started with 6 patients in Ontario office, and now we have 600 patients across.
Wow.
So you must be seeing that it has some efficacy.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Otherwise,
yes.
You wouldn't invest in it as a company.
It's not. It's a tremendous change that we make in the patient's life. It serviced any community. I mean, we have just acquired, last year we acquired a company in Colorado. We just acquired a company in Texas, Georgia, and Tennessee, a huge home health company. Accent Care is the only company that I know that has a depression management program. So when I went to Colorado last month and I did a presentation to the community, they were all very happy to see
that. That's an interesting way to describe a skiing vacation, frankly.
So they were very happy. I mean, when I go and give talks in the communities, the community get very excited about it because, you know, nobody talks about it. Nobody wants to admit that they're going through these things.
Yeah.
Right? And when I stand there and I stand to talk to 100 people sitting there and I say, well, 30 of you are taking antidepressant or anti-anxiety, whether you want to admit it or not. That's a very profound statement because majority of the people don't want to discuss those things, right? So you bring it open. Mm-hmm. It's the elephant in the room that's you need to talk about, you know. And so the efficacy and the impact of the program is great on the community wherever we serve them.
Great.
Let me add something too. Another way besides having the scale scores better, what we see with the medical patients that we have besides the behavioral health part is that some of the diabetics, their blood sugar levels improve instead of having 400, 500 every time my nurse goes to evaluate them after having a behavioral
health. Yeah, high score isn't what you're
using.
No,
it's not good. You want to be between 80 and 90.
Wow.
we do see the improvement because we also have every 2 weeks we have a kind of, it's called case conference. We had one today, as a matter of fact, where we review the case and what's going on. Between the nurses and the people involved in the care to discuss do we need to change the approach or what's going on. And I'm happy to report that our behavioral health patients that we currently have, all of them have shown improvement in their either compliance to take their medications, compliance to do physical therapy. So that shows me that the treatment is working as far as they becoming more wanting to change and improve their lifestyle.
It's great. You know what? We really are on overtime right now. Could you guys throw out your contact information? Because it's been a great show, and certainly this is something that is a possibility for lots of people in our community.
Sounds great. Just to let you guys, the audience know, we have a website too. It's www.accentcare.com, www.accentcare.com, and the website is interactive, and it shows all our different programs and all our offices and the contact numbers. Here for El Centro, we're located in 2344 South 2nd Street, Suite A in El Centro. We're right across the Social Security office.
Okay.
Well, that was good marketing.
Yeah, I know where it's at.
And our phone number is 760-352-4022. If a patient or a family member has a question on how to take advantage of these services, and we will help you as much as calling the doctors and see if we can admit a home health patient that requires the services.
And also, you can access it again at the kxlradio.com. And the podcast will be there, and also the same information that that Carlos just repeated.
Thanks, Carlos. Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So how was it for you, this show? Was it a good... No, I'm just kidding. Hey, you guys have a great weekend out there. I'm giving the guests a hard time. Hey, have a great weekend out there. Thank you so much for listening. This is Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness in Imperial County. I'm Scott. She's Maria.
And be well.
Take care.
Have fun. Bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.